Hey, what's going on? Welcome to The Doug Show. My name is Doug Cunnington, and in this episode, it's a little bit of a grab bag. I'm going to talk about some potentially relevant things, some stories about myself, and some irrelevant stuff that doesn't really matter to anyone, but it's kind of funny, and it kind of bridges the gap from a couple of the other topics. I don't know. There may be some other points in here too. We'll see where it goes. Oh yeah. And I was actually doing some pre-research, or I guess it's just research for a topic for my other podcast, Mile High Fi, about happiness, which I tend to talk about pretty often on that show. But there's a couple cool studies, which I'll reference kind of just the thesis. And if you have any comments on that, I'll be certainly interested in it. So I won't bury the helpful stuff too deep in here. I'll get to it maybe in a second. But one thing, I actually do watch a lot of YouTube videos, and like to the point where I'm thinking, hey, should I cut down on my YouTube consumption? I think it's probably all right. I usually watch it when I'm on the treadmill or the elliptical or whatever kind of cardio thing I'm doing, and when I'm at the gym. So usually I like pair it with working out. So that's usually pretty good. But I've been watching more travel vloggers and YouTubers, a lot of times around like van life and or traveling, often domestically, not always, but a lot of times in, you know, the Rocky Mountains in the West, where I am actually located and I'm interested in that stuff. Sometimes some national park coverage. And that's one of the helpful things that I'm going to tell you about. So I have a couple of videos on my channel where I tried to vlog a little bit. I like national parks, so I tend to go to them. In fact, my wife and I, it's our mission to go and visit national parks. And we've been to something like 25 or so. I live very close to Rocky Mountain National Park. In fact, we were just in Estes Park for a few days and went into the park multiple times. While I take pictures and, you know, maybe some short videos, for the last couple years, I haven't videoed or thought about publishing that stuff on YouTube or any social media, because a lot of people don't realize was out there. I'm gonna cover the kids' ears or whatever. Usually I just cuss, but I'm gonna get upset at the National Park Service the Department of Interior. They kind of fucked up. They fucked up pretty significantly, I think. So there was a law enacted, I can't remember when, I want to say within the last 5 years or so, where basically if you're recording something that could end up on social media where it could be monetized sometime in the future, you had to get a fucking permit for videoing, even if you were doing it on your phone. Like it's not like you had to come in with a big crew, but you had to apply to an individual national park. They had to go through the application and then approve or disapprove, and you maybe had to pay. So let's say I'm a vlogger, which I am technically, and I wanted to record some shit on my phone, video me and my family, publish it on YouTube. Maybe some ads would come up, or maybe I got an advertiser to sponsor the video or something. I would have to go through the exercise of getting a application done, getting it approved, and I might have to pay money to do it. Same application if it was like a fucking film crew with a bunch of people that were actually impacting the other people around them or something like that. So that's the rant. And I was very annoyed. I didn't record anything about it because I was kind of pissed off about it. I mean, it's kind of a dumb rule, especially like I hardly monetize my videos, but let's say a few years go by and I want to monetize a video and turn on ads for a specific video for some reason, then I could get fined. So if you go research this, you'll find some coverage of it. The thing is, it wasn't enforced that much. So actually, like in the last, I would say 6 months, I was getting a bit of an interest in doing some vlogging in national parks and or traveling to some. And I thought, well, I'm gonna have to, I don't know what day I'm gonna go in. Cause you have to say, like, I'm gonna record this day. Here's the number of people I'm going to have. This is the equipment I'm going to use. Some of that easy to answer. But let's say I don't know what day I'm going to record. Makes it more complicated. It was sort of set up for like Hollywood film crews or documentarians or something. But again, I'm just one person recording with my phone, right? So anyway, they have this stupid fucking rule set up. And in the last 6 months, I was still seeing like on social media in general, on YouTube, very small channels were like publishing videos from national parks. And I'm thinking, did they go through the exercise to like fill out the fucking applications and all that stuff? And my hunch is no, they didn't, because it's not a well-known thing. And it's hard enough to start a YouTube channel and record it and then edit it. And how heartbreaking is it if you do that and then you get fined for having that video out there? Really sucks. So anyway, the news is the National Park Service took their fucking head out of their asses, and then they have a new, there's a new law in place, which I think it was just signed in the last few days here. It's like in 2025, the Explore Act, which like all laws is confusing and filled with legalese and such. But if you have under six people, then you don't need a permit. Consult your lawyer, by the way. This is not legal advice or advice of any kind. This is just me absorbing some of the information. And you can do your own research. Other YouTubers have talked about this. So if you have 6 to 8 people, which I would say would be pretty rare, unless you're running like a company, then you may have to get an authorization for that, because that's a larger group. But under six, you should be okay. And it should be okay for non-commercial, like personal use, like if it's just your home video, or if you do publish it on social media, including YouTube, and it is commercial, i.e. you earn money from it from ads, or there was some kind of sponsorship or something like that. But generally, you know, read the fine print and make sure you're all right. As long as you're not impeding or doing stuff you're not supposed to, like you need to be able to record this in normal places where people go to. You can't like exclude other people or close off an area for you to do your recording. It's just like, if you could record without bothering other folks, that should be fine. And the thing is, I took some photos like within a national park. I also took some short videos, and I just haven't published any of that stuff because I'm a little paranoid and the motherfuckers out there could potentially fine you for each incident. And it could be fairly expensive, especially if I'm like, I'm not actually monetizing this. At least I'm not running ads on it specifically. So do your due diligence. This probably does not impact very many people at all, but it does make me feel better about recording some of my adventures when I go into national parks. So it was a winter time when we were out in Estes Park and went into Rocky Mountain National Park. And it was just like a lot of snow. We were tromping around in the snow and ice and going hiking. And it was very quiet. It was just after New Year, so not a lot of people were in town. A lot of people were back in work. And it was just very chill and quiet. And it was a cool thing. And now I could probably, you know, share some of that footage, although I didn't record much because I didn't know this law was coming around. So one of the other things, when I was watching some of these YouTube videos of travelers, I won't mention who it is, not that it matters, but it seems like a nice person. And she was basically talking about like living on the road, living in her van, and traveling around, staying in campgrounds, and often going to truck stops and taking showers in truck stops, which pretty common. I go to like Love's often, which is a gas station trucker stop chain. And it's pretty nice. That's where that person went. And I'm going to tie a couple things together. So stick with me here. I'm going to try to explain it so that it's not too confusing. She was talking about how nice truckers are. And she was saying like, yeah, sometimes, you know, it's a little more expensive to buy the shower. So you could like pay some money. They'll let you take a shower there and you get like your own, your private bathroom, essentially. And you can take your time. And it's supposed to be pretty nice, right? So if you're living in a van, and even if you have a shower in your van, going to a truck stop might give you more room. You could use a little more water. You don't have to worry about the gray water and blah, 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 right? So it could be inefficient. But she mentioned that truckers are so nice. They just give her a shower credit because they are full-time truckers. So they have like reward points, and you earn showers with reward points. And I was thinking to myself, yet not everyone gets that sort of treatment. This person, again, she's a nice person, so I won't mention her name. Very huge channel, so it's kind of irrelevant, right? It doesn't matter if I say anything, but she's in a bubble, all right? She's in a bubble. She was also like a fitness model, and I think she was a cheerleader for maybe the Raiders or something like that, and was on a TV reality show. She's very pretty. Lovely personality, very pretty. The thing is, she has no idea she's in a fucking bubble. And it made me think about this 30 Rock episode, and I'll break one of these cardinal rules, which is talking about a TV show that you like. But I'll put a link in here. 30 Rock is really an awesome show. And John Hamm was the love interest for Liz Lemon. And this is why you're not supposed to do like a retelling of your favorite TV show or whatever. But basically, John Hamm, he's a very handsome dude, right? And he doesn't realize that he's treated differently. And there were so many fantastic examples. Liz eventually points out to him. I'll put the clip in, but you'll be able to dig in. I just watched it. It's about 5 minutes long. And yeah, he had no idea that he was getting special treatment. He thought everyone just gets treated like that. So some examples, without spoiling the clip here, I do encourage you to watch it. So without spoiling it, is he was able to walk up to a super busy restaurant where like no one can get a table. You have to, you know, book a table 3 months in advance and that sort of thing. He walks in and he's able to get a table like that. Oh, surely we'll be able to do it. Another restaurant, a separate restaurant, like a Greasy Spoon kind of place. He's like, you know what? I don't feel like any of this stuff on here. I'm just going to order like a shrimp po' boy and a raspberry soda. And it's just bananas. All right. So again, I'm not going to spoil the whole thing. There's a couple other things where he was like going to play tennis with Liz. And he was like, well, I don't want to scare you, but I'm actually a tennis pro. Yeah. I started playing at the Y, and all the kids' moms, they wanted to take lessons from me. So I started teaching tennis lessons. It turns out he's horrible at tennis. And they were just like trying to get lessons from a handsome man. The point being, our friend, my YouTube vlogger person that I'm mentioning without saying her name, she has no idea. She's in a bubble. She gets special treatment and has no idea. It's very interesting. Very interesting. And the thing is, if you're in the bubble, that's cool. You don't even know it. But the rest of us, we're like, yeah, no one gets treated like that. I'm sure perhaps in a friend group, you know, there must only be like 10% of the people that are like that. I have no idea. But anyway, pretty funny. All right, let's move to the happiness topic here. And thanks for going with me on that ride. I'm certain the humor didn't come through like I hoped. So perhaps there's a small percentage of you that have actually seen the episode of 30 Rock that I'm talking about. So when you watch it, you'll be very amused. It's fucking hilarious. Okay. So the happiness stuff, and I'm going to read a bit of a kind of a summary. And this is a culmination of essentially three fairly well-known studies. So this is around money and income and happiness. So A Wharton and a Princeton research collaboration investigated the relationship between income and happiness in resolving the conflict between two studies. And this is a little study that, so there were two studies, one in like 2010, one in 2021 or so, then in 2023 or so, and I could be off on a year or so, a little bit, but not too far off. The two researchers, they worked together on a collaborative study. So it's like, I think it's called like adversarial collaboration. So their studies found sort of two different things. Then they worked together to come to hopefully better information, which I think, you know, when they analyzed why they came to different conclusions, I think they were able to tease out more information. Their findings indicate a positive correlation between higher income and increased happiness for most people. However, a subgroup experiencing unhappiness showed happiness rising to about the income level of $100,000 annually before plateauing. This research used data from a happiness tracking app and an adversarial collaboration methodology. The study's implications extend to policy decisions and individual life choices, emphasizing that while money contributes to happiness, it's not the sole determinant. And you might remember hearing that up to $75,000, like your happiness doesn't grow if you have more money. And that was the 2010 study. So basically it said your happiness will grow to $75,000 and then basically it levels off. And that didn't sound right to me because I thought, well, I got happier when I earned more than $75,000. And, you know, adjusted for inflation, it's a little bit more, call it up, you know, whatever, 100, 110, people could figure it out, right? Inflation changed that a little bit, but 75,000, then it kind of levels out. And I didn't think that was right. I heard that sort of sentiment from other people. And I think that was, you know, interesting information, but it does mean, you know, at the bottom line, it was just like, oh, money won't make you happy, except like if you really need it for like the core, you know, minimum living, you know, food and shelter and a little bit of comfort. But beyond that, it kind of levels out. Well, it turns out that that study, and I'm going to probably do a couple or series of episodes on this topic for my other show, but like the bottom line is, the 2010 study kind of focused on the low end. So it focused on sort of the negative of not having enough money. But the 2021 study, it focused on the higher incomes and sort of the positive outcomes that could happen. So 2010 study focused on the sort of the lower end and negative, and then the new study focused on the positive. So when you put the two together, they found that, I want to say around like 15% of people are unhappy generally. And once they hit about 100,000, then it kind of levels off. However, there's a group that's at the top, say it's the top 15 or 20% that are pretty happy people. Well, they get happier when they earn a certain amount. And then over, I can't remember exactly, but call it 180,000 to 200,000. Once they hit that point, they actually started getting happier faster with even higher income, up to about $500,000 per year for their income. And the interesting part is that that group that was already, I mean, they were content, right? So happiness, contentment, there's some vocabulary that you have to work out when you're asking these questions. You have to ask other sort of different questions to get the right information that you're looking for. But basically, the people that were happy got happier when they earned more money, which kind of makes sense. You know, if you think about anecdotally, people in your environment, sometimes like they get promotions, they earn more money, and they're still kind of grouchy. You know, some people will have other things, right? Maybe they have some external circumstances that are negative, say within their family. And that's not necessarily their fault or anything, but there's some other issues that they have to deal with. And that's makes it harder for them to be content and happy and all that thing, all those kind of things, even if they do have more money. So it kind of makes sense in some ways. It's not like, you know, someone's just always negative. Sometimes there's those external factors, addiction, other stuff that may impact things, maybe not even them personally, but just within their immediate family or even extended family if it impacts them. So I found these topics super interesting, and the fact that the $75,000 thing, like, never quite, I didn't quite buy it completely. I like the idea of it, that money can't buy happiness, but money can, like, solve some problems, and money can be a really good tool to buy back time for certain people in certain ways. And it, you know, it's not universal. Like, some people are comforted and calm, and it's kind of meditation to, like, clean the house and, like, do yard work. And they actually want to do that stuff. Perhaps they spend time outdoors, or if they're, you know, cleaning their house, it's just somehow meditative for whatever reason. Other people hate that stuff and they want to hire someone and they will pay a lot of money, and that actually makes them happy to not do that kind of stuff. So it could be sort of the opposite, but you can use money as a tool to help you do things that you want to do more of and do them with people that you want to do them with. So anyway, kind of a short episode today, kind of random. The middle was a total mess, and I appreciate you going along for the ride. One quick thing, you know, talking about finances, one, you know, partner that I'm starting to work with, because I use this company Mint Mobile, is just save some money on your mobile phone plans. And I was nervous to switch over to Mint for, honestly, a couple years. I thought it was going to be hard to switch. I was traumatized from the olden days when you had to pay money to transfer your phone number, and it was hard to transfer your phone number, and I was scared I was going to lose my phone number back in the day. But it turns out it's so simple and easy to do these days. And in fact, if you're a little bit nervous about the coverage that you might get in your house or where you live, you could test it out. So highly recommend checking out Mint Mobile. I save roughly $1,000 per year for my plan and my wife. And I tested it out for, I think, like 3 or 4 days. Everything was fine. Frankly, most of the time, we're in a normal metro area where there's plenty of service all around, and I'm able to, you know, get service wherever I need it. Definitely worth checking out. Almost certain that you'll be able to save a lot of money pretty much immediately if you switch over to Mint Mobile, but you could follow the link and check out the deals. The deal that I get, I pay annually. I pay $15 per month annually. So it ends up being a couple, you know, $100 that I need to pay. And then that's good for the whole year. And you kind of lock in that rate when you pay for it annually like that. I get 5 gigs of data. And if I go over, sometimes if I'm traveling and I have to use more data on the road for some reason or another, very simple to add on a little bit more, and it's not a huge price, and it's very transparent about when you're getting close to the limit and that sort of thing. So anyway, Mint Mobile is great. Check it out if you want to, and thanks a lot. We'll catch you on the next episode.